You're listening to Issues and Ideas on KCBX. I'm Tyler Pratt. We're excited to bring you a two-part series on diversity and inclusion at a major university on the Central Coast, Cal Poly. It's been in the spotlight for several years after racist incidents highlighted the need for more awareness of diversity and inclusion on the campus. This year, an associate dean in Cal Poly's College of Science and Mathematics was recognized by the university at a big event hosting the American philosopher, political activist, and social critic Cornel West. Camille O'Brien has been a strong advocate of inclusion and equity efforts for underrepresented students and was the inaugural recipient of the Campus Martin Luther King Legacy Award. Camille sat down with me in the KCBX studios for a lengthy discussion about race, diversity, and inclusion at the university. We'll be airing this in two parts this week and next, and it will be available on the KCBX website. We begin by letting Camille introduce herself.
My name is Camille O'Brien, and I am a professor in the kinesiology department at Cal Poly and one of the associate deans in the College of Science and Mathematics.
Kinesiology falls under the realm of mathematics, is that?
Yeah, it's kind of strange. Actually, recently our department name changed to Kinesiology and Public Health, so I keep forgetting that. But about, 22 or 3 years ago, the department moved into the College of Science and Math during a budget cut in the Cal State system. They used to be in the College of what was called Professional Studies.
And you've been with the university for a minute.
Since 1999. Yes, indeed. So coming up on 20 years.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Thanks.
Tell me a little bit about your background. Where do you come from? Where did you grow up?
Oh, okay. So promise me you won't hate me. I grew up in Boston. Go Patriots.
I'm a Saints fan.
Oh, so I know. They got robbed.
I'm extra bitter this year.
I'm sorry. That was bad. Should have been the Saints and the Patriots.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
I think it would have been a more fun game.
I think so. Maybe higher scoring.
Exactly.
But I grew up in Boston and went to the Boston Public Schools. And then I went on to Smith College for my undergrad degree, where I majored in French and got my master's degree also from Smith in exercise and sport studies. And after a couple of years of teaching and working in various roles, I went off to Ohio State, the Ohio State University, and got my PhD there. Okay. And now I'm in California.
And what brought you out to the Central Coast?
Really, the job at Cal Poly. That was it. You know, I was a professor, as assistant professor at Ohio State, and looking for an opportunity to do more teaching, because Ohio State's much more published and research-oriented. Not that that's a bad thing, but I really saw the opportunity at Cal Poly to work more with undergraduates, which was very appealing. So I applied, and here I am.
And what's so appealing about working with undergraduates?
They are, especially at Cal Poly, they're more curious, and maybe the chance to really mold and shape folks. Not that I feel all omnipotent, but I used to coach and swimming. And so what I see with teaching and working with undergraduates is that sort of thirst and hunger and just curiosity that sometimes isn't as evident in doctoral students or, master's programs, or if you're just doing research and not always, engaging with people and learning and growing and watching growth be so grand. So that was what's appealing to me.
It's also a really, exploratory time in many of these students' lives, especially if they're coming right out of high school or whatever. Oh. So there's so many feelings and learning and changing. And
yes, that's correct. I mean, that's the 18 and overs, or 18 to 24s. And even if they're not traditional age, there's just the world is people's oyster. And sometimes it can get really confusing. So to have a chance to help people navigate that helps me stay young, helps me grow, which is exciting.
Great. Well, recently you were the inaugural recipient of the Campus MLK Award that salutes a campus community member who upholds the legacy of the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. by leading with love and hope to create a legacy of diversity, equity, and inclusion. So
I know, right?
How did that feel to win that award?
I was and still am so shocked and so I can't believe it. When Brian Hubane was reading the announcement about it and describing the award and the purpose of the award. In my head, I was thinking about all the people at Cal Poly since I've been there, or the people even before I came out to California, who have shaped and molded me and, growing up in the 60s and 70s in Boston and sort of living through some of the things I lived through in my life. I thought, wow, this is going to go to somebody really special. And I could think of a million other people other than me. And then he said my name and my legs gave out on me. I really literally couldn't believe it. I just might even get a little emotional now because people have been so supportive and kind and their expressions, and it means so much to have this recognition.
Well, congratulations. And this was at the Martin Luther King dinner, and yes. Cornel West came in and he spoke. I was there, yes. And when your name was called, there was a resounding applause and cheers from students in there. So you've clearly had an impact on a lot of people at the university. Looking at your resume, I mean, it seems no surprise that you would win this award.
Well, thank you.
You've really been a champion for diversity at Cal Poly and inclusion, correct?
Yes, I would say so. And it kind of comes naturally to me. I mean, it's so like I know I'm where I am because of other champions for diversity and inclusion. And it's just how it's kind of in my bone marrow and my DNA to do the kind of things I've had the chance to do. And especially, you know, to be a voice and supporter of students and faculty and staff and myself helps us all be better and feel like opportunity is just there. So I'm very touched and very excited.
Who are some of the people that helped shape you in this journey?
Oh my gosh, where do I start? My family is really first and foremost in my mind, the people that have shaped me. I come from a very large extended family and a pretty multiracial, multi-ethnic, very diverse family. And thinking back on times like at Thanksgiving or at holiday times, you know, multiple religious views and beliefs, there was never any shortage of interesting conversation around the dining room table. And my father and his twin brother were the first African Americans to earn their master's in business administration at Northeastern in 1964. And I remember they had took a picture of, you know, my father and his twin and then my mom and my aunt and us as kids. And, you know, that was in the Boston Globe and just always surrounded by a lot of firsts. And my Uncle John O'Brien, was the first African American elected to the Boston School Committee in an at-large city election, which was pretty huge in the 1970s because it was on the heels of a court-ordered desegregation of the Boston public schools and busing. And, you know, so kind of growing up amidst all that tension, but also seeing that even through all the tensions around race and divisiveness, that communities could come together, you know. And so I saw a lot of advocates and activism as a child, which kind of rubbed off on me and sort of, you know, like I said, comes as second nature into my bone marrow to keep aware and be involved in, you know, trying to make sure that we're all be included.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you are chair of the Inclusion and Equity Committee, which looks into policies and practices that are barriers to student success.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that committee?
Right. So this committee for Inclusion and Equity is actually, the one I chair is a college committee. And so in the spring quarter of 2018, talking with Dean, our dean's name is Dean Wendt. So talking with Dean.
And this is in the College of Science and Mathematics, correct?
That's correct. So there was some talk about needing and wanting a college-wide committee. Some departments had already started to create committees in the college. We got together a group of volunteers during the spring quarter of 2018 and started visioning, coming up with a vision, a mission, some objectives we want to accomplish. And so we have six objectives right now, still evolving. And the idea around looking at the policies that could serve as barriers to success, we right now at the point of coming up with task forces, right? So we're going to have a student success task force. We'll hopefully have a faculty success task force and a staff success task force. And so baby steps at first. I think we kind of know what some of those barriers are. Typically, it's finances. A lot of students who are underrepresented have, you know, financial limitations, challenges, barriers. Sometimes it's sort of the internalized stereotype threat. You know, some students, I just think of myself as a student. I can't put my words into another student's mouth. But I know for me growing up and coming through college and even graduate school and even as a professor, sometimes it's easy to feel like I'm not as good as somebody else because of internalized feelings around racism or sexism, those kind of things. So working with a lot of mentors and things, I realized, the reality is I do deserve to be here. And so, but I see that in students a lot of times, they self-doubt and sort of like sometimes in self-loathing, like they just don't feel like they're worthy to be at Cal Poly. And it's heartbreaking to see somebody already setting themselves up for failure before they have even tried. And it gets impacted more so when people make like insensitive remarks or and trying to think that they're trying to help somebody, a faculty member or a staff member can inadvertently demoralize a person and even though they're trying to help. A lot of us can't help ourselves, you know. It takes a lot of time and energy and awareness to even know our own biases, you know, and how they are, we use them so subconsciously or unconsciously, implicit bias, right? And it takes a long time to sort of become aware of those implicit biases and how they manifest themselves and what we say and what we do, what I say, what I do. I'll speak for myself again. I see it over and over again. People lose themselves, right, in the process of trying to fit in. So my last name's O'Brien, right? So growing up with a last name that looks and sounds Irish with brown skin in the city of Boston was sometimes troubling because people would assume I was white. And then they'd see me and I could literally see them just be taken aback like, oh, they'd say, you're black, right? Or African-American or whatever, depending on what year or generation I'm in. Because over my own lifetime, I've gone from being colored to Negro to African-American to Afro-American. So our labels shift and change, our identities, you know, and how we kind of see ourselves or how other people see ourselves in the world. So I could definitely, you know, see where color blindness can sometimes lead to problems. And I want to try to encourage us to be conscious, color, race, ethnicity, gender conscious, not blind.
Just joining us, you're tuned to KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. I'm Tyler Pratt, and I'm speaking with Cal Poly Professor and Associate Dean Camille O'Brien, an advocate for better inclusion for underrepresented students on campus. Let's return to that conversation.
What do I hear from students who are underrepresented coming to Cal Poly? I think I hear a lot of the same things I experience as a person of color. You know, where are more people that look like me? Faculty and staff don't really understand what my needs are. There is no way to get my hair cut, you know, products. You know, do you know a barber or a hairstylist in town that can do braids or, you know, like the smallest things, like just in terms of your own comportment and feeling, you know, like you've got a place or a space. And so I think what I've found myself doing around diversity and inclusion issues is, again, starting always by listening, sharing a little bit about my story. I came to Cal Poly in 1999. I was, at the time, the only African-American faculty member in the College of Science and Mathematics, so the whole college, and, of course, the only African-American person in my department. And that wasn't anything unusual. I mean, this is nothing unusual. I've had this experience before in higher ed. But it did become more and more overwhelming to me to be out here 3,000 miles away from my family. Most of my mentors and advisors are still like Ohio or, you know, points east. And so my transition to Cal Poly was not smooth. Teaching was going well. I got along well with my faculty colleagues, but there were a few instances on campus or in the local community where I just felt othered or disrespected. And it just, even though things were going well, it just became too much. And my mother was having some health problems, so I thought maybe it's time to leave. Always sort of having to overcome those like little, you've heard of microaggressions, right? So just hearing it constantly in faculty meetings or in one-on-one conversations or walking around campus, nobody explicitly saying anything mean and nasty. Well, I was called the N-word a few times, you know, just in the local community. I was exhausted, so I started looking and was able to get another job and was offered a position at University of Tennessee, Knoxville. And I took a leave of absence and I left. I packed up. I sold my house. I'm gone in 2003. Didn't think I'd ever look back. And the grass isn't always greener, right? You know, I had some good friends and colleagues there and also at Vanderbilt. So I felt very supported and welcome in that department and program. Again, it was a chance to work with doctoral students, which had a lot of similar interests to me in what I was studying. And that was exciting. It was fun. But you know what I missed most of all? The students. Cal Poly students. I missed their commitment to their education. I missed their intellectual curiosity at the undergraduate level. I missed just, I felt like they were much more willing to engage with me and engaging on in the same kind of courses I was teaching. Whereas, you know, Eastern Tennessee, not so much. You know, now the undergrads in my classes at Cal Poly, you know, you'd go to the beginning of the course, you'd talk about the syllabus, you'd lay out the plan, you'd start having your classes and things, and students right off the bat were like, you know, how I want to learn more, what can I do, here's something I read that sounds like we were talking about in class the other day, I thought you might be interested. There was this really two-way street between me and the students at Cal Poly, still is, right? And at University of Tennessee Knoxville, it was much more like pulling very impacted wisdom teeth. Now, the institution, lovely institution, but I was glad I took a leave of absence. And after 1 year, I returned to Cal Poly. And when I came back, I said, you know what? I'm not going to let what I feel is a losing battle around feeling welcome. I'm going to be more of a partner with folks on campus to help me feel welcome and help others like me feel welcome. And that's when I started getting more involved in campus organizations, campus governance. The rest is history, as they say.
You know, I've heard this in my reporting with students on campus that Cal Poly offers some of these programs that are the only ones on the West Coast for these science and engineering and aerospace mm-hmm. programs, and you get some of the best and the brightest out here. And so it draws a student population that really cares about their education. Mm-hmm. And in talking to underrepresented students out here, they felt really thrust into the spotlight, say last year when a lot of the awful racist things were happening on campus, and thought it was unfair. I'm here to go to class. I'm here to learn. And now I've been thrust into a spotlight about mm-hmm. how do I feel mm-hmm. about all this, say the blackface incident.
Yes.
When I'm trying to pass my test and go on to the next term.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I think that that's kind of not just at Cal Poly, but everywhere around the world, and especially in higher education, you know, people of color, we don't need to be the ones like helping to teach others about racism or sexism or the way these things intersect, right? I think it's on everybody's responsibility to educate themselves and increase their awareness. And I think that does exhaust people to kind of constantly be put in the it taxes them. It's just called cultural taxation is a phrase I've heard before. This expectation that the students who are the targets of the nasty, oppressive, racist, whatever behavior are the ones that try to help make everybody feel better, or that they're the ones that have to be continually asked how do they feel or how's this impacting them. It's like I'd rather look at the institution and say what could we do differently to educate and all of us about, you know, diversity and inclusion. But and then when people sort of, you know, push the boundaries or step out of line, you know, how do we create policies or practices to try to help us educate, discipline as necessary, if necessary, you know, people who are, you know, violating the rules of the campus or the policies, you know. And it gets really tricky really quickly because you sort of can be encumbered. We can be impacted by or encumbered by the tension around freedom of expression and hateful expression or outside sources or the social media. So it's very, very complicated, right? So I feel like our students, what I really, really appreciate about our student community at Cal Poly is their level of activism. And in 2008, when we had the incident at the Crops House, there was a house in one of the College of Agriculture, Food, and Environmental Sciences has, you know, students who live and learn by doing in the different places where they grow fruits, vegetables, whatnot. And so apparently I wasn't there, but there was a party at one of these houses. And around Halloween time, the students or people involved hung up a noose and a sign that said no in words and F words, derogatory term towards gay people or hippies allowed. And this is sort of like early days of social media, right? And the students came together within 24 hours across all different types of identities, social identities, cultural identities, and they had a protest in the University Union Plaza you know, hate is not a Cal Poly value. And a bunch of my colleagues and I stood in solidarity with the students as they called themselves to action and wanted to hold each other and the institution accountable for, you know, creating an environment where folks didn't have to see these images or hear these words that made it very clear that you're not welcome here. You know, when it says no so-and-so allowed, right? Not hard to interpret that as you're not welcome here, at least in my mind. There was President Baker at the time did host a forum, a community forum, and allowed time for people to ask questions. And this was in the early days of Cal Poly's adoption of the inclusive excellence model from the American Association of Colleges and Universities. So inclusive excellence is kind of a way of being, a way of doing, thinking about how to set up your institution where everybody can be excellent because they're included. And it can take, it can manifest its way in itself in a lot of different ways, and through curriculum, through programs, practices, policies, whatever the case might be. So I think it was kind of good that we were just kind of really beginning as an institution to look at diversity more deeply and not just counting like how many white, how many black, how many old, how many young, how many Pell eligible, financial aid, whatever. We were looking at campus climate issues.
Well, let's talk about some of the initiatives that you've launched on campus, this Love, Empathy, and Respect campaign.
So Love, Empathy, Respect. So that wasn't just me. I just want to start off there. It began 2017, January. Milionopolis is coming to campus. So again, a lot of activism around that. Many faculty, staff, and students are sort of trying to encourage Cal Poly not to allow him to speak. He came. There was a lot of money and time and energy spent on protecting the campus and people from any possible riots and whatnot. There's also sort of this uptick in flyering posters around campus on in academic buildings, on bulletin boards, with really derogatory statements and comments against queer people, against Barack Obama, and calls for, you know, people to engage in white supremacy. So this is happening, like all this, you know, flyering is happening around campus. We also had the free speech wall that was erected on Dexter Lawn, which is on campus. People would write very, very hateful. I don't even remember all, just nasty, hateful, insensitive comments about people based on different social and cultural identities, whether they're lesbian, gay, bisexual, or black, or immigrants, you know. It just was really bad. And faculty and staff were starting to talk to each other. We're concerned for the welfare of our students. We were like, well, what do we value? You know, what? How can we have a way to express our values and show students that we care? And that we're glad that they're here, and we want everybody to feel welcome and have a chance to be successful. I mean, college isn't supposed to be easy. I mean, it's going to challenge us intellectually. It's going to push us. But at the same time, it shouldn't be filled with this chronic, you know, attacks on our identity. And so that's where the love, empathy, respect came up. Those are our three values. A student, graphic design student, designed like you see the logo and images on badges or stickers, magnets, buttons, posters. We had a couple of pop-up events over the last few quarters where we just will show up with a table and just give out a buttons and stickers and magnets to students and talk to them. It's a visible campaign for inclusion. We've had a lot of support, not just at Cal Poly, but in the local community. I was at Food Fest the other day and I had my button on and was talking to someone else shopping in the Food Fest up in Atascadero, and I told him the same story and I had a couple of buttons in my pocket, so I gave him a button. He works at Atascadero State Hospital. So I've given buttons to people at Dunkin' Donuts in Massachusetts because I think people can get behind that. The hashtag is Mustangs United, right? And we're united around the values of love, empathy, and respect. And while I might not be able to freeze someone's speech, if they have the right to express their values, so don't I. And so these are the values that I choose to express. And we find them counter to some of the hateful expression that's happening. And I think it's been a nice way to, you know, rally around a message of inclusion.
You're tuned to Issues and Ideas on KCBX. That was part one of my conversation with Cal Poly Associate Dean Camille O'Brien about diversity and inclusion at Cal Poly. We'll air part two next week, where she discusses efforts she brings into her own classroom, as well as faculty diversity at the school. You've been listening to Issues and Ideas on KCBX Central Coast Public Radio.